originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you tonight from our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and also to those of you tuning into the website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance for riders who have given everything to the sport. Please visit the website www.pdjf.org if you are able to help. So our guest tonight has won multiple riding titles in Maryland. He was a finalist for the 2014 Eclipse Awards for Apprentice Jockey, and now he's on the Derby Trail with El Arib with 959 wins, over $29 million in earnings, and he's just getting started. Jockey Trevor McCarthy. Trevor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Christina. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule, Trevor. I know you're a busy man. You're traveling all over the country these days. And where are you off to today?
Today I ride at Parks. I have a couple mounts there today, the first race and the eighth race. So hopefully two winners.
Hopefully two winners. I like it. I like it, Trevor. And are you driving yourself? Do you get your agent, Scotty, to take you anywhere? Or are you behind the wheel today?
I'm behind the wheel today. You know, he drives me sometimes, but
yeah.
Most of the time I like to do the driving by myself.
Ah,
I just get on the road, put the music on, and get going.
There you go. There you go. Do you have like any type of, you know, pump up music to get you ready to ride? Do you listen to your what do you listen to on the road?
I like to listen to classic rock.
Okay. Like name a couple of your favorite.
Led Zeppelin.
Oh,
the Eagles.
Yeah.
Fleetwood Mac. I'm more of a chill classic rock. I would say Led Zeppelin. They're a good going kind of band. So
Led Zeppelin's my favorite, Trevor. You have very good taste in music. I love it. I love it. Well, let's get started here since you're on the road to ride at Parks today. The way we usually do these shows, Trevor, is that I want to go back to the beginning. I want to learn how you first became involved in the sport, and your dad rode. Your dad was a very good rider, in fact. And so tell us what it was like growing up with your dad, Mike McCarthy, and watching him ride every day.
Well, it all started, you know, when I was about 3 or 4 years old. You know, my dad was still riding at the time at Delaware Park. And you know, I just saw him, and he was a hero to me, and I just wanted to follow in his footsteps. So every morning when I wouldn't be able to go to school, or I would go and follow him at the racetrack. I'd wake up early in the morning, and he'd get on his horses to go work out. I'd follow him up to the racetrack, walk up and walk back, and I did it for about 7 or 8 sets. You know, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I just wanted to be near him and near the horses, and just wanted to watch every move he made.
And you were
I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the horses. I fell in love with racing. And, you know, every morning I woke up and wanted to be with him and follow him. And I learned so much watching him and at that young age, I knew that I wanted to be a jockey.
And how old were you at this point?
Maybe about five or six.
Five or six? Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, I was so young, and, you know, people thought my dad was crazy for bringing me around the horses and around the racetrack, but, you know, he knew I would love it, and he just kept bringing me and bringing me and bringing me, and I fell in love. I loved it.
And he was...
It was so cool watching him do his thing.
Yeah.
And now, you know, being able to kind of relive his dream with me being a jockey as well.
Oh, absolutely. To have him watching you now, he has to be just so proud. And in those early years, Trevor, you would go to the racetrack with him, and at a very young age, and you'd watch him win. And what did you learn? Did you think, you know, at that time you wanted to be a rider, and then obviously at five or six, it's, you know, probably you weren't maybe consciously thinking, you know, that's what I want to do and how do I learn how to do this. But what did you learn in those early years from watching your dad?
Just hard work was the big key. And he really worked hard. He would get on, man, 8, 10, 11, 12 horses every morning. And he would run to one barn, to the other barn, to the next barn. I mean, he was always so busy in the morning. And, you know, looking back, I just learned that, you know, that's a huge deal, is that you have to work hard in the morning. And when you do that, you know, you can be very successful.
Well, you've definitely picked up on that from him. And where did he mostly ride at?
He started out riding in Maryland, actually. And actually in New York, and then he moved to Maryland when he had the bug. And then he moved to Finger Lakes and was there for a good amount of time. And then he went to Philadelphia for a few years, and then went to Delaware for maybe his last 6 years or 6 or 7 years he rode.
Was it hard for you as a young kid and moving around so much of the time?
No, you know, because I didn't come around till he moved to Philadelphia.
Okay.
So we moved from Philly when I was 2 years old to Delaware. And that's where I basically grew up, is Delaware.
Okay. So you were pretty much in one place. Pretty much in one place when you were young. But and then how old were you when you actually started getting on horses?
When I started getting on horses, I had to be about maybe eight or nine.
8 or 9 years old.
it was funny. My dad, he'd take me, when he was riding, he'd take me barn to barn, and he'd throw me up on the ponies, and he'd throw me up with some of the other, you know, very laid-back racehorses. And, you know, then he started training. I had to be about 12 or 13 when he started training. And when he started training, he threw me up on anything. He had me jogging around the shed row. And I had no fear in the world. You know, it was great. I thought it was the best thing. And I said, Dad, can I jog this one? Can I jog that one? He'd say, yeah, you know, here. And he'd throw me up. And, you know, I'd jog the horses around the shed row for about a half hour and then, you know, then put them back in the stalls.
What did your mother think of all this, Trevor?
My mother, she might have not knew 100% of what was going on. But no, she definitely trusted my dad.
Yeah.
And she knew that I was very interested into the horses, and she liked the idea that, you know, she was always nervous about me riding, mm-hmm. just because of what she went through with my father. But I think she's very proud of me, and she's always very supportive. And she looks back, you know, looking back now, she might have thought, oh, you know, I might have been a bit silly then, you know, to kind of be cautious. But I guess that's every mother.
It is, most definitely. But you said what she went through with your father. And obviously, the life of a jockey is not an easy one. There's injuries, there's weight, there's the highs and lows of the sport. But go into detail a little bit. Your dad is tall, as are you. Was that one of the things you were referring to as far as what she went through? Or did he have a lot of injuries? Or what exactly did they go through?
I would say my mom, you know, was a little worried about weight with me.
Yeah.
More than injuries. My father was lucky. He didn't have very too many injuries in his career, which is good, you know. But I think her biggest thing was weight. And she still always says to me, you know, I know you love it, but, you know, you don't have to, you know, if you struggle with the weight, you know, there's always new things you can do. And I always yell at her back, no. But, you know, the weight's been good for me. I've been, you know, she taught me a lot about my weight, and so has my father. So they always seem to put me kind of in the best direction and the best way to do things. And if you eat right and do the right thing by your body will do right by you, you know.
That's right. And so many riders, unfortunately, try to, you know, take the easy way out, and not really easy. I shouldn't really say it like that, but they don't do it the right way and consequently have health problems, and they're more susceptible to injuries when they're so dehydrated and they can't even focus. And, you know, so it's so important. Obviously, they've drilled it into your head to eat right and to take care of your body, because, as you mentioned, you know, it will pay you back in return for that. And how tall are you, Trevor?
I'm 5'9".
5'9". Oh, my goodness. 5'9". Now, I read an article when I was doing my research for this show. I read an article that you were sitting down at dinner with your family one day, and you all were just eating vegetables. And I guess so when your dad was riding, you all would pretty much stick to the joggy diet as well.
Yeah, you know, my mom always cooked a good meal at home, especially for my dad. But we always ate good food, vegetables and stuff like that. A lot of salad, chicken, fish. So, you know, it was good. I kind of learned early about, you know, what to eat and what not to eat.
Exactly. You were surrounded by it at a very young age. And so these days, now that you're riding every single day and traveling and everything like that, what does your diet involve? What do you eat? Do you do any additional exercise, or just riding so many horses a day, I would think would be enough. But tell us, what's your schedule as far as that goes?
You know, I like to, in the morning, I don't really eat much. I might just drink some water early in the morning. I've never been a morning eater. But before I ride, I like to eat either maybe a little cup of soup or a couple of scrambled eggs. I like power bars a lot. That's been a big thing with me. Mm-hmm. So I'll eat that before, you know, the races. And sometimes when I have to reduce weight, you know, if I like to run a little bit. I've been starting to run, which is great. You know, I've really learned to take off some fat and body weight or water weight other than just straight water weight when you're in the sauna, you know. So I would say that would be a big thing for me that I've really learned is the running over the sauna.
At 5'9", it cannot be an easy task, Trevor. And before we get back into, you know, talking about your history and how you came up into the sport, I also want to talk about, I was watching a replay of yours last night, and I'm tall, and I rode, and I'm 5'6", and so it was, you know, it's a little bit more difficult to wrap up and look pretty on a horse when you're tall, but you're extremely tall, and you, yet you look so good, and I want to know how you do it.
You know, it's been brainwashed in my head since day one. I could remember when I was like 15, 16, 17, you know, being in the basement with my dad on the equalizer. And him saying, you know, just keep sitting back and keep getting lower and keep getting lower and keep sitting back more and, you know, make room for your arms and, you know, stay low, stay low, stay low. So it's always been kind of brainwashed into my head to stay low, that, you know, we have to sit back further and we have to sit low on a horse because, you know, we look so big and we need room for our arms to push.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my dad's been a great help with that, and so that's a big deal with me. And I'll kind of say to myself in the race, like, you know, I got to get lower, I got to get lower. But but definitely you got to be strong. You got to be really strong for it. And I would say a lot of the times we almost have to be stronger than, I would say, a lighter guy or a shorter guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we have so much more, I would say, length to us that we have to get down lower than they do.
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. You, like I said, you definitely do a good job of looking pretty on a horse, and you would never guess watching you ride how tall you are. And that's always, you know, something that I also worked on is trying to, you don't want to look like, you know, some big, like you said, someone big on a horse with all these, you know, long arms and legs. You don't want to give that perception out that you're tall. So you do a fine job of that, Trevor. And
you
mentioned the Equisizer. Did your dad have one there at the house during your childhood?
Yeah, you know, early, when he stopped riding, we didn't have one really. There was one in the jockey room, and they kind of just came out when he stopped riding.
Okay.
So they weren't big yet. And then, you know, a few years later, they kind of just blew up. Like, everybody had one, and mm-hmm. or everybody was getting one, because everybody realized, like, wow, you know, what a great thing this is. So for my 12th birthday, he actually got me one, and it's been abused.
It's been abused. Well, that's...
I would ride it every day after school, and, you know, all the time. We would get in the basement, and we'd put on TVG, and we'd ride races, me and my dad. So, and I still have it till this day. I still have it, so it's great.
That's awesome. And that had to be hard when you're a kid and you're going to school, but yet you're so obsessed with horse racing and that's all you want to do. Were you distracted a lot in school?
Yeah, and in school I always wanted to watch the races, especially when my dad ran horses, mm-hmm. you know. But at that age, I was kind of, and more in high school than middle school. I would say my sophomore and junior year, I was kind of like, still like focusing on friends and girls and other things, sports.
Sorry.
But really my later in my junior year and then my senior year was big, you know, because I knew, I said, okay, you know, I really got to get going. And I came to Philly Park and I met Christina McManigo that year.
How about that?
My senior year, I started galloping horses there.
Oh my God, I love it.
And then I started riding with Christina.
That's right. That's right. Back in the day, Trevor. Back in the day. I love it. You mentioned in high school, you know, you're kind of focused on friends and girls and sports. So you mentioned sports. I want to know, what sports did you play in high school?
I was a big runner in high school. I did cross country and I did track. I did track, I think, for 2 years. And then I was big. I was in the school marching band. I played the trumpet. So mm-hmm. I did a lot of traveling and a lot of activities with that.
You played the trumpet, Trevor.
Wow. Yeah. Yep.
You have many, many talents. Many talents. We're here with jockey Trevor McCarthy. He's joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Trevor, do you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, I have one sister. She's 26 years old. And I have one brother who's 24.
Did they show any interest in the racetrack?
Not at all.
Not at all.
They like watching me, and they like, you know, rooting for me and seeing mm-hmm. how well I do. But other than that, they're not really into the horses.
So you were the only one who was bitten by the bug, right?
Yep. My sister, since day one, she fell off a horse when she was young, and that was it for her.
Really?
And my brother, same thing. You know, he kind of fell off a horse when he was younger, and then, you know, he worked on the track. He would hot walk every now and again when he really needed the money or needed a job.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, you know, that's, you know, he don't want nothing to do with it anymore either.
You're the only crazy one, Trevor.
Yeah, right.
Now tell me, before you started riding at Philly Park, did you gallop for anyone prior to actually taking out your license, other than maybe your dad when he was training?
You know, my dad quit training just the year before I started galloping horses, and I started galloping horses at Fairhill when I was 15, and I rode out for Grand Motion for 4 years.
Wow.
So I would, the first summer I rode for him, I rode out for him the first summer, and the second summer I rode out for him, and then during the weekends I was able to come in and get on some horses when I was going to school. And I did that for another year also, and he's been a great supporter, Graham. I actually started doing some amateur races too, and when I started those, he put, my first one was for him, and he put a horse in named Philium that I rode for him.
Really?
So he's been a huge supporter of me.
What did he teach you?
I mean, he taught me to gallop. He taught me how to breeze horses, and he showed me a lot of horsemanship, you know, how to really take your time with a horse. And it's just, I wouldn't say he taught me so much, but, you know, he has by his training methods, I would say. But a lot of the guys that worked for him at that time, and they still do work for him, they really taught me a lot, and they tortured me, I would say, and I still say it all the time to them. But they did a good job. You know, they really pushed me to do better.
Mm-hmm. What about, and I just say this because this was something that maybe took me an extra amount of time to really pick up on, but forming that clock in your head, was Graham pretty strict on, you know, hitting the times when he wants you to breeze a horse in 49, you got to breeze a horse in 49? Was he pretty strict on that? Did you learn a lot about that while working for him?
Yeah, he always had the, towards the end I was there, he always had the radio in our ears.
Oh, okay.
Which was great, you know. But Graham's not too big on going fast in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really good to kind of just sit up there and really think about, you know, things and how fast you're going. But I really, when I started riding, that's kind of when I learned, you know, a clock in my head. That really, that first year, that first, like, 8 months I started riding with the bug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really learn about pace and from the morning time to the afternoon.
It's not easy by any means. I mean, when you stop and think about it, you know, you're riding on the back of a 1,000-pound animal, and you're supposed to know exactly to the second how fast you're going. It's really not an easy thing to pick up on, but once you got it, you got it. You know exactly, you know, how fast you're moving and how that feels. So it's for me, like I said, it was a big, I guess, turning point when I really got it. You know, and it's not easy, most definitely. But again, we're joined tonight by jockey Trevor McCarthy on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Trevor, you mentioned the amateur races you participated in, and Graham put you on your first mount there. How did you guys run?
We were second.
Second?
We were... We went a mile on the turf at Pimlico Racecourse, and it rained all day, or all morning it rained, and it was a really wet turf course. And the horse probably should have won, but I was just so weak at the time that I really didn't know what to do, and I was so unfit, you know.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It was a great experience, and it was bad. And that's morning I talked to Graham, and he goes, "Oh yeah, the horse ran good," and he goes, "Yeah, I thought you'd be a bit stronger than that, Trev."
No.
And I'm like, "God, Graham," I said, that's a lot, you know? And he kind of just laughed.
Well, and
I wanted to say, it looked a lot harder than it looked, you know?
Oh, my God. Well, and the thing is, you think you're fit. You gallop horses all the time. And until you ride that first race, you know, it's just a totally different ball game actually riding races versus galloping horses. And there are muscles that you use when you ride races that you don't use any other time. So it's hard to, you know, really get completely race fit until you start riding. But when he told you that after the race, what did you do to become stronger?
You know, I worked out a little bit. I didn't want to put on too much muscle. Mm-hmm. I was always scared of that, to put on a lot of muscle.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, always ran and, you know, all my exercise are nonstop, especially when I really decided that I wanted to do it, you know, and I wanted to ride. So I had to become stronger. And it took me a while. Even when I started riding, I would say that those first 300 or 400 mounts, you know, finally to where I was able to get my seat and I was able to find a rhythm and figure out how to push on a horse and really get down and ride one.
And after that first amateur race, Trevor, did you ride any other amateur races before taking out your apprentice license?
Yes, I rode a few. I won my first race ever was at Penn National on a horse named Jungle Chief. He was 52-1.
Wow.
For Norman Pointer.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that.
Oh my goodness, 52-1.
Yeah, it was cool. It was awesome.
So you didn't think you were going to win that race going into it, probably, right?
When your first race. No, not at all. Not at all.
What was that feeling like, Trevor, when you realized that you were in front of the wire for the very first time?
I was shocked, you know. I was really shocked. I didn't know what to do. And then when I got back to the winner's circle and I saw my mom and dad, you know, I kind of got upset a little bit. A good upset, you know. But it was kind of a relief.
All right, Trevor. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that after this short commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Horacio Caramanos was the only jockey to win two stakes races last week as he won the Not for Love Stakes aboard Lockie and the Harrison E. Johnson Memorial aboard Matt King Cole at Laurel Park. Caramanos finished in the money on 60% of his mounts with 3 wins, 2 seconds, and 1 third place finish. Tyler Bays had a solid week as he finished in the money on all 3 of his stakes mounts, including a win in the Irish O'Brien aboard Enola Gray. Bays finished the week with 4 wins, 3 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Florent Giroux increased his lead to an impressive 38 wins in the Fairgrounds rider standings last week. Giroux was second North America in wins with 9 and added 5 seconds and 4 third-place finishes. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Rafael Bejarano, finished second in earnings in North America and won the only Grade 1 of the weekend. The Peruvian won the Santa Margarita aboard Valladori and ended the week winning 31% of his mounts. Bejarano finished the week with 5 wins, 2 seconds, and 1 third-place finish. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at jockeytalk360.com. Half a Chance is the story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any racing fan. Visit jockeytalk360.com for more information. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
And now Lariba's coming after True Timber. J-Boy Zet goes under the whip farther back. Apart from the crowd, has lost ground toward the rail. Top of the stretch. Here comes Ella Reeb coming after True Timber and taking charge and taking off by the eighth pole. Ella Reeb opens up by two. True Timber fights on second. J-Boy Zet on the outside is into third. Apart from the crowd is fourth. Down to the final 16th. And another impressive performance by Ella Reeb. Under the wire to win the Withers by four in the end. True Timber held second. J-Boy's Echo was third. It's tight for fourth. Bonus points or apart from the crowd.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Trevor McCarthy. And Trevor, we just heard the replay of the Grade 3 Withers Stakes this year aboard your victory aboard Ella Reeb. And I definitely want to touch on that. Well, not touch on that. Talk about that in detail, because that's very exciting for you to be one of the front runners on the Derby Trail. But I do want to wrap up. Before we get to that, I want to wrap up. We talked about your very first victory, and I would love to talk about your thrilling apprentice year. You were actually a finalist for the Eclipse Awards in 2017 for leading apprentice. And tell us what it was like that first year of riding and trying to learn the ropes, and who taught you, you know, the most, gave you the most pointers, I suppose, when it came to riding, and what tracks did you ride at?
My very first year of riding was very up and down for me. I started riding at Parks, and I would say the end of November of 2012, and I struggled really bad there. I didn't really get a true chance, and I rode a lot of horses that weren't very live. But it was a good thing in a way. I learned so much. It took me 70 mounts to get my first winner. So I just learned really how to get run out of horses and worked on my form and all that, and really just kind of learned the ropes, you know. And I had a lot of help from my father, and at that time at Philadelphia, Tony Black was still riding. He helped me out a little bit too. So I had two really good guys, or good jockeys, that were helping me. Definitely my number one is my father. You know, and still to this day, I owe him everything. You know, he's just been so good to me. But so once I kind of got going, or, you know, I kind of was just going through the moves at Parts. My agent now, Scott Silver, was down at Laurel with Jeremy Rose at the time. And, you know, I've known him for a very long time, and it was always a joke growing up that, you know, he would have my book someday. And, you know, finally one day at Parts, I met up with him, and, you know, I asked him if, you know, he could take my book, and he said, yeah, why not, you know, come down to Maryland. I remember at that time, Christina, you were actually making your transition as well to Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you telling me, oh, yeah, so many good things about it and how great the people were down there. So, you know, I was so excited to get going. You know, I ended up going down there just beginning of December. And, you know, I got going a little bit. I was riding and, you know, winning a couple races here and there. And once January 1st hit, I actually rode four horses that day, and I went all four.
Wow.
On January 1st of 2013. And it just seemed like ever since that day, everything has been going really smooth for me.
Wow. And I remember having that conversation, because I was also struggling at Parks. It's, you know, it's kind of a funny place, really. And you either get in the click or you don't. And yeah, we were both struggling there. And then I was the same way. Maryland, they give you a shot, and they're just such good people there. And obviously, You know, Maryland's treated you very, very well over the years, Trevor. And yeah, you just immediately started taking off. And I remember watching and so happy that, you know, we were both doing well there. And what is it about Maryland, in your own words, what is it about Maryland that's so appealing to you now?
You know, Maryland is a really good place. There's a lot of very good people there, and everybody seems to give you an opportunity, which is really nice, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody's always looking to help everybody start out, and kind of once you get going and get your feet wet, everybody tries you and everybody gives you an opportunity, which is great, and you just got to, you know, get lucky with those opportunities, I would say.
Now, your dad spent some time as an agent as well. Did he help you kind of plan out your apprentice year, given the fact that I believe every new rider has the ultimate goal of winning the Eclipse Awards? Did he help you plan that out, how to do that?
Yeah, you know, he wanted me to start out late in the 2012 year, just to kind of get my feet wet, you know, get kind of practicing and kind of learning the ropes of things. And then when it came to, I would say when it came to kind of go on and, you know, really kick going and want to maybe have a goal to win the Eclipse Awards for the year of 2013, that's when I decided to move my tack to Maryland.
And unfortunately, Trevor, you had an injury during your apprentice year, which of course caused a little bit of a setback. And I remember that day. I remember being on the track and hearing everyone say, "Oh my God, Trevor just got hurt." And I think, what, didn't the horse flip over on the track on top of you?
No, the horse ended up dropping me, backing up twice. And I got back on the horse, and the pony took me to the pole. So we're actually just breaking off to work. And when the pony let my horse's head loose at a good pace, you know, mm-hmm. it was at a good speed, and the horse just put the brakes on and he stopped in about three strides.
Oh my God.
And I went flying over his head, and I ended up breaking my left tibia that day. And that was probably one of the worst days in my career.
Oh my goodness. And you were out for how long?
I was out for 5 months, and I had three screws in my tibia, and I ended up getting them removed also later on.
Mm.
But yeah, it was a big setback, and at that time I was very upset, and you know, I just was very anxious to get back and mm-hmm. and try and have a goal at the Eclipse, you know.
You never once for a minute thought, after having such a horrific injury so early in your career, you never once thought for a second, maybe I don't want to do this anymore.
No, not at all. You know, that's just part of the game.
Right.
You know, if you're going to have injuries, it's just when. And it's definitely, you know, you don't want to have a lot of injuries. You have to be careful. But anything can happen, you know. That's just how it is. And, you know, I looked past it, and I just looked forward and said, man, you know, I got to get back, and I got to get strong again, and I got to push back to my goal, you know, and try and win the Eclipse. And, you know, to still be a finalist was a big deal to me because I was out for so long.
Well, exactly. 5 months during valuable time is definitely a major setback, and the fact that you were still able to be a finalist is quite remarkable, Trevor. And you've had a couple of injuries during your career so far.
Yeah, also, I would say about a year later, I broke my wrist, and it was at Laura also. And I actually finished second in the race, and another horse won the race with, I think it was Scott Lake's horse at the time, and mm-hmm. Tyler Connor, he was riding it. And I was just next to him galloping out, and his horse fell. And when his horse fell, it fell right in the path of my horse.
Mm.
So my horse's instincts was to stop, you know.
Right.
And it's kind of the same thing that happened to me in my first injury, that the horse slammed on the brakes and I kind of went flying, and I kind of braced my fall, or tried to. And when I did, I put my hand down and I broke my wrist. I broke it on both sides.
Jeez.
I broke my radius, and I forget the other side. Radius and aerial. So I ended up breaking those two, and I was out for another 3 months then.
How long? Oh, 3 months, you said? You were out for 3 months. That's...
Yep.
I don't know about you, Trevor, but I had several injuries, and any time I would be laid up, I couldn't help myself. I would turn on TVG and watch the races at whatever racetrack I was riding at. And of course, while you're away, other jocks get your mounts that you know you've been riding, and you know, they're just sitting on wins. And I used to sit there and I'd throw the remote at the TV. I'd get so mad. was it frustrating for you to be on the sidelines and watching horses that you should be riding get up and win?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I made it even worse because I go to the races just about every day.
Oh, no.
Because I had not, like, once I was able to walk or get around on the crutches, I was like, you know, what else am I going to do? Just sit in the house, you know? Mm-hmm. And I loved being at the track and being around the horses and watching the horses. And so I would go to the track every day like a dummy. And then about the sixth race, I'd get mad and I'd walk out and then go home, you know?
Oh my goodness. Well, eventually you came back from all of that and quite the comeback, because you're a finalist for the Eclipse Awards. And on your, I find this so remarkable. I remember reading this article on the time it actually happened last, I guess 2 years ago now. You celebrated your 21st birthday by riding in the Preakness.
Yeah, that was really cool. That was big, you know. And it was for a great guy who's been super, super good to me, and we've been super lucky together. Jose Corrales, I know you've ridden for him too.
Oh, I love Jose. Yeah, yeah.
And so it was great. And even now, it's like, you know, he still has the horse Bodie's Alpha, and I've ridden him a couple of times, but he just won about a month back. He ran the other day. He didn't run no good, and he actually beat a really nice horse, Paige McKinney.
Yeah.
About a month back, but I always love to see him do well.
Right.
But that was a big thing for me, to ride the Preakness at such a young age, and especially on my 21st birthday. It was like the best birthday gift ever.
I would say so.
Especially against a Triple Crown winner.
Right. Oh, my gosh. That had to be just an incredible experience. Do you remember the race in detail?
Yeah, I remember. I broke about a head in front, and then I just kind of got shuffled back, and, mm-hmm. you know, he just... That day it was really sloppy, and he didn't like it at all. He kind of just ended up trailing the field, but you know, just to be in it was a really cool experience.
And it had to be especially cool for you, because I don't think your dad never rode in a Triple Crown race, did he?
Never.
Wow.
He only rode in the Haskell. He actually he rode a horse named Milwaukee Brew.
Oh yeah, yeah. But for you to, like you just said, to do that at such a young age had to be an incredible feeling. Even if the horse didn't run very well, you know, you were still in it. And, you know, before long, Trevor, you're going to be in the Derby. that has to be a pretty cool feeling to be sitting aboard Ella Reeb here as we come closer to May. Tell us about that horse.
Al Reeve, he's awesome. You know, he's a really nice colt. He seems like he can do anything, and he's got good natural speed to him. You know, last time was just a bit unfortunate. We got caught up in a speed duel. Mm-hmm. But he's actually going to run in the wood, I believe, on April 4th.
Oh, good.
So I'm really looking forward to that and kind of just try a new thing with him, maybe just settle him back a little bit.
Yeah.
Rating them in behind horses, so I think, you know, we'll see how that goes. I know there's some decent horses that are going to come up for that. I believe actually Graham is going to run his Irish War Cry, if I'm not mistaken, in that same spot also.
Yeah, I definitely I remember I think we have a handicapping show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as well, and I remember watching the race, and it was just one of those things, you know, bad racing luck, you know, the horse went with you, and right. I look to see, as you mentioned, I think sitting off the pace, for sure, he'll definitely improve off of that. And what was it like, you know, first getting on this horse and knowing that eventually you found out that, you know, they were aiming this horse for the Derby? I mean, that had to be such an exciting feeling.
Yeah, when he went to Jerome by 11, I was like, wow, you know, I always thought he was a nice horse. And I just, you know, never knew how really nice he was. And when he went to Jerome that day, I was like, wow, you know, that's impressive. And I really didn't know. I really didn't want to, like, get Derby fever yet. It was just so early, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to get my hopes up. But when he came back to win the Withers, and he did it pretty impressively that day, I got really excited. And I thought to myself, man, maybe, you know, this could be a ticket to, you know, to Churchill for me. And
wow.
When he came back the other day in the Gotham and he ran third, I kind of didn't let my, you know, didn't get down. I kind of just stayed positive and said, mm-hmm. Hey, you know, at least we were third. We still picked up some points. And, you know, there's another race for him. You know, we got one more chance to get in.
Well, and now you know more about the horse, too. And what is he like to ride?
You know, he's pretty laid back to ride. You know, he's really fast out of the gate. Like when you need him, when he gets those first jumps and he gets anxious, and then he really, when you drop your hands on him and just sit back, he really turns off. So he's kind of good anywhere, you know. And as soon as you need him, he's got a big turn of foot, and it seems like he's got a big turn of foot and a really nice stride and a big stride to him. And he kind of, you know, when he kind of gets out there on his own, he'll get a little bored. I wouldn't say so much hang, but kind of just not as interested as he, you know, as he is maybe running at something.
Right.
Which, you know, his first, I know he broke his maiden. He went wire to wire that day. And then he came back to win the James Lewis, and he galloped again that day on the lead too. So he seems like he can do whatever.
Now, as we get closer to the Derby, and obviously this year has been a very strange one, given the fact that, you know, McCracken is out and Classic Empire, well, McCracken's coming back apparently, but Classic Empire and Mastery, the horrific news from Mastery from California, are you allowing yourself to get really excited as we get closer to the Derby and everything is just kind of, you know, all of the maybe possible favorites are just disappearing?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's exciting. But, you know, there's new horses and, you know, there's always going to be somebody you kind of don't know or that might pop up and run a big race or that really hasn't shown, you know, his true ability yet. So I kind of just to look at it as, you know, in a good way, you know, a couple of these favorites out is nice, but, you know, there's always nicer horses too that are going to be there, you know, that might not have came around yet.
Well, I'll be cheering for you, Trevor, on the first Saturday in May. I'll be there. But Joggy Trevor McCarthy is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Trevor, another horse I want to talk about is Ben's Cat. And Ben's Cat,
the old man,
he's coming back at the age of 11.
Yeah, he's doing good. You know, I just worked him the other morning, his second work back, and it was just a nice, easy work for him. He ended up going 52. And it was kind of a bad track that morning. It was real wet and nasty and sticky. Not his favorite. But he seems to be doing well, you know. Victor Carrasco, he actually worked him his first work back for me. And he said he worked really good. He worked there 3/8 and 37. And, you know, everything's smooth. Everything's, you know, he come back good. You know, hopefully we'll get lucky with him again this year, and maybe he can win the Jim McKay again.
Yeah, this horse, he's an incredible 32 wins out of 60 starts and not easy victories at that, but stakes level competition. And is he better, Trevor, is he better on the turf or the dirt?
I think he's better on the grass, you know.
Yeah.
I think he's a way better horse on the grass. I think the dirt, he's kind of, I think now that the older he's gotten, I think the turf is maybe a bit easier on him than the dirt. But other than that, you know, I've seen him run some really good races on the dirt. I think just last year he kind of just had his ways and he just said, you know, I want to run on the turf, not the dirt. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, from what I hear, anyway, he's a very quirky horse to ride.
Yeah, he's funny. You know, he has his ways, and you know, he doesn't like to get too bottled up, you know, too much. And kind of likes to sit back there, and he's got one really big move. And when you really need him the most, he's there for you, you know. I mean, that day in the Jim McKay, he really ran a super race for me. At the eighth pole, I could have called myself, you know, third best. And at the 16th pole, you know, I was like, oh my God, you know, he's wanting to win it more than I am. You know, he really dug in, and he split horses, and he was like, hang on, kid, you know. I'm 10 years old. I'm going to win it with or without you. So he, you know, he got right up at that time, and that was one of the best wins of my career. That was really something special.
I remember watching that race, and he was just extremely impressive, even more so than usual. And are you worried at all about him coming back and at this, you know, old age, if he still has that, you know, spring to his step, if he still got it?
No, not really. You know, I'm kind of excited to see him. I hope he does well this year. It's exciting. There's, you know, there's not too many 11-year-olds anymore that can really do that. So,
no.
If he's all for it, you know, so am I.
Is he the nicest horse you've ridden?
I would have to say he would be maybe about second or third. Ella Reeve, he's on my top of the list right now.
Okay, Ella Reeve. Okay, that was going to be my next question. So Ella Reeve, Ben's Cat, who else makes that list?
I wrote a filly for Graham, Fortune Pearl. She was a really nice filly. I won the Delaware Oaks on her, and she came back to run fourth in the Alabama. I think that was in 2014 or 13.
Mm-hmm. That had to be.
She was a really nice filly also, and she made a lot of money and running some really big races.
That had to be very special to win the Grade 2 Delaware Oaks for Graham, who, of course, kind of brought you up in a way and taught you so much in your early years. And that had to be a really, you know, satisfying feeling to win for him.
Yeah, it was, you know, and it was really cool because the last time Graham won that race was in 2001.
Wow.
And my dad actually won it for him.
Really?
So, yeah, it was really something. It was really cool. And actually, they have the win picture up in their house of my dad winning the Delaware Oaks for them.
Oh, my goodness. Who was that horse your dad was aboard?
Oh, I want to, you're going to have to look that up.
Okay. No worries, Trevor. Well, no worries. I won't, don't blame me on that there, but.
That's a hard one to remember.
But that had to be a really special feeling. That's even a better story to hear that. And what you already have so much going for you, Trevor. I mean, you've only been riding a couple years, and you're knocking on 1,000 wins. Are you conscious of that? Are you thinking about how close you are to that big milestone?
It was actually funny. I knew I was around, you know, getting to 1,000. It was funny. I didn't know how close I was until the other day when somebody said something to me. I think I'm like 41 off or 40 off.
Yeah, you have 959 right now, so you're getting close.
Yeah, so you know, I'm excited. It's a big milestone for riders. You know, to win 1,000 races. You know, it's cool. It's awesome. I mean, that's that's if you think about it, 1,000 wins, that's something.
It's a big.
It's a big
number, Trevor. And again, you haven't even been riding that long, really. And was one of your goals to pass your dad's number of victories?
Oh, of course.
Of course.
I got to beat him in something. And the other day, it was funny. I won 6 consecutive races in a row. So I rode at Laurel
really?
On Friday. I won the 5th, the 6th, the 7th, and I was done for that day. And then I came back the next day, and I won the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Oh,
so when I won the 3rd race, he catches me after, and he goes, you know, I've never won more than 6 races, consecutive races, you know. He did, like, 3 at Delaware and 3 at Meadowlands one night, and he did 6 races in one day at Delaware. So he was like, you know, pressure's on, you know, bring it on. And he was like, I hope you beat it, you know.
Wow.
So I ended up, you know, only getting the 6.
Well.
So then I texted him back and said, you put the jinx on it.
Oh, no, he put the jinx on it. Oh, my God. Well, you will break that record most certainly, Trevor. So much going for you. And unfortunately, we are all out of time. But good luck today at Parks. Good luck in the Derby. Just good luck with everything, Trevor. You have so much going for you.
Thank you, Christina. It was great hearing from you.
Great talking to Trevor McCarthy tonight. Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I am Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.